Welcome to the Architect My Life podcast. I'm Maya Schlachter, serial entrepreneur and CEO of the MGS Global Group, where we serve architecture and design firms with project delivery, such as drafting, 3D visualization, and graphics production support. I am also the founder of Architect My Life. My goal is to help creative entrepreneurs such as architects and other design-related professionals scale their business to six or seven figures. I also show them how it's possible to do this while living a rich life outside their work, reclaiming time and energy for themselves and their families. Creatives were taught how to master their craft, but not taught how to run and grow a business. Each podcast episode features a different entrepreneur from the creative industry who shares their journey towards success. If you have a growth story that others in our community could benefit from hearing, stick around to the end of the show to see how you could be a guest in one of our future episodes. Now, let's dive into this episode. I am so excited to introduce our guest today, Hafsa Burt. Hafsa Burt has been practicing architecture for over 21 years. And her portfolio includes major massive projects like the San Francisco Airport, institutional buildings, multifamily, hospitality, retail, you name it. She previously worked at Frank Gehry & Associates and SOM before starting her own company. Hafsa is an environmentalist, and also her firm has been a pioneer of health buildings and environment sustainability before the terms were even industry norms. Having been involved in initiating green building and ordinances and design standards. She is also a multi-award winner. I mean, she has like several awards, some of which you probably have heard of, the AIA Young Architects Award, and recently Innovation in Design by Fast Company for her Box Factory project. And more impressive, I mean, not that it wasn't impressive enough, she has spoken in over 100 conferences and talks on indoor air quality and carbon neutrality. And I'm excited to welcome Hafsa Burt. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Thank you. Appreciate it.
So tell us about you and tell us how you started your company.
So I've been practicing for 22 years. And when I, my personal passion has always been environmental sustainability and just an awareness of resource preservation and conservation strategies. So I tried to introduce those concepts when I worked at larger studios, and it just wasn't a priority. And so I knew that as soon as I get licensed, I would probably start my own studio and focus on these issues just because it was a personal ideology. I mean, it followed a personal ideology and was a personal passion of mine. And so as soon as I got my license in 2006, I started my studio. And right off the bat, I was able to collaborate with one of my previous bosses, Harry Overstreet. And it was, and we worked on a project for San Francisco Airport. I was one of the consultants on it. And we also worked on Merritt College and West Oakland Teen Center. So instead of starting small, because of those collaborations, I was able to build up a good enough portfolio and also gain experience as a business owner.
Wow, I'm speechless. That's pretty major to have the San Francisco Airport as one of your projects as a consultant or collaborator. Congratulations. You probably, it was probably a learning curve to just move to huge projects, right?
No, because the teams are very strong. So it's actually very, you know, the projects at the airport move very smoothly because the team composition is so strong. MEP, architectural team, it was a design build. So Hensel Phelps was the GC on it. And it wasn't the entire airport project. It was like, you know, one of the projects at San Francisco Airport, because San Francisco Airport is pretty big. And it was a security.
Yeah. So I have a question. You consider yourself an environmentalist and a pioneer. And I know a lot of people, you know, just kind of start becoming environmentalist And I don't, you know, like, I really admire what you've been doing the past few years during in your practice, that you're really promoting sustainable design and healthy building and environment and environmental sustainability. You know, I think sustainability should not be a suggestion, but an obligation in all the firms. What inspired you to, you know, become, you know, a pioneer?
So like I mentioned, I've always been interested in resource preservation, the planet's health. And this is like even before I started my studio. And that was one of the reasons why I started my studio, because I wanted to focus on it. Right when I graduated college, the Kyoto Protocol was introduced. And we knew that these, you know, we have these impending deadlines to meet to keep the climate change or the GWP potential of, you know, development industry or any kind of industrialization under a certain degree threshold to even consider that the planet would survive or the people would be okay. And this is Kyoto Protocol came around in the late 90s. So if anybody was following what was happening and you know, the deadline and the impending deadlines that we had to kind of observe as a global community, they all became environmentalists. And I was just graduating college and I was pretty passionate about these, you know, the stuff that I was reading and what was happening around the world. I was just more aware. And that was like, you know, 22 years ago, when I did my thesis project in college, it was a compact city within an urban environment that was mixed use and it was sustainable. So I was thinking about these things a long time ago. It was just a personal passion.
That's great that you're able to convert your passion into your business. A lot of clients don't understand the importance of sustainability, and a lot of this building systems could really be expensive and costly. So how do you promote that when you're working with a client who has a tight budget or something like that?
I think it is, you just have to educate the clients and then show them different options. And because of LEED, which has been around for like so many years, a lot of these sustainable measures have gone down in pricing just because it's become competitive. And so I think it's all about educating the client through the process and letting them understand that, you know, whatever your initial cost may be, you can always see the life cycle impacts of it, and it pays back. And it's also pays back positively for not just the project, but also for the planet. And in that process, I also started Box Lab to develop actual prototypes, because I can educate clients all I want. But then if I can actually build prototypes and show, hey, you know, this is an example of a 1750 single family residence, and it's completely carbon neutral, it's off grid, it's only run on renewable energy sources, and it consumes way less energy than a typical 1750 square foot single family of the same, you know, same program. Then I have a living prototype that I can actually do a tour and say to a developer, potential developer of residential, potential residential development, and say, hey, look at this. This is a prototype built, and it's quarter of the money that you'd spend on a comparable single family residence, which was not carbon neutral. So that's the whole purpose. We started Box Lab so we can show comparative cost studies. And also
Box Lab, for the people who don't know what that is.
So Box Lab is a R&D, active research and development part of arm of my firm. And we develop prototypes which are carbon neutral, but they're actually built. And so they become sort of retreats and something that anybody can tour in the industry and kind of see what's possible in the carbon neutral realm of the building industry.
So it's actually built, you have prototypes?
Yes, and we have another
prototypes. Where can we find them?
We find them all over, I build them all over. So Box Factory was built in Jackson, California. And then we're doing another one. It's a 300 square foot study of a micro living, and that's that should be out by, I would say, March, end of March. So
you can find in the website, I think our our listeners and our audience probably will want to see that as well. Maybe you can give us all the links to your website later on. We can see a real project. So my other question is, how do you continue to grow as a designer? You know, like, where do you get inspiration? Like, I saw one of your projects that was featured in a magazine, The Hot Residence. Was that the one with the container boxes that you stacked?
Yes, that was a proposal we did for affordable housing in Melbourne, because there's a housing shortage and they were looking for infill ideas for urban development in the affordable housing capacity. And so that it was just a proposal done that if it was an infill site, you can have, you know, shipping containers stacked on top of each other in different configurations on a structural grid. And that way the site constraints are not really important because these containers are prefabricated, you can stack them in any kind of configuration to meet the site restrictions.
Amazing. It was so beautiful. I didn't even know it was containers until I read it. I'm like, whoa. Yeah. I really liked it a lot. So how do you get inspired? Like, where do you get your inspiration from when it comes to design as a creative?
I think constantly challenging myself to just think outside the box. Because a lot of times when we're working for clients, we are kind of making their vision real. So it becomes kind of their baby because we have to take their budget and their program and make it a reality for their business. And so with proposals such as this, you know, it's fun to challenge ourselves and creatively and see, you know, how we can push the boundary a little bit. And that's always what keeps me going. I could do product design, and I also sculpt and paint. So that's always a plus.
Oh, wow. That's amazing. How do you have time to do all this? And I know you have two young children.
Yeah. Well, you have to schedule things, right? And a tight calendar and a tight schedule always helps. Everything has to be on a schedule, otherwise nothing gets done. So I'm pretty, rigid in scheduling and keeping up with deadlines and making sure things are done. And I'm also very good at compartmentalizing things and know when I need to step away from something to focus on personal, or when I need to focus on, you know, a deadline. So all parts of my life are equally supported and met with. So I would say keeping a very, very tight schedule and following the calendar to the T, like even, I mean, everything is scheduled.
I'm the same way because I have team members all over in different time zones. So you need to follow a schedule or else nothing will get done. But I like what you said about compartmentalizing, because not a lot of women in general know how to compartmentalize. There's always a blur between personal life and business. You know, people can't shut down what happened at home. They might bring it at work. Not just women in general, but a lot of people don't know how to do that. Okay, stop worrying about this, move on to the next. What are your strategies for compartmentalizing, and how did you develop them?
I think just knowing what needs my attention at what time and prioritizing, that would help compartmentalize stuff. And I've always been very strategic. Like, I mean, when you're in a professional environment, it's, you know, you keep your personal life at home. And when you're in a personal environment, you keep your professional life at bay. It's not very easy. Like, you have to consciously be aware of, you know, how you're going about your day. But you have to make a conscious effort in doing that. So you're fully present, and it doesn't just come naturally. You kind of have to develop those habits. I mean, you know, you're a business owner. Yeah. And when you're wearing a bunch of hats, you know that you have to juggle a lot of things at the same time, which is easier said than done, but you somehow manage, because that's like just that. Our life. That's our modern. Said,
conscious decision to do it. You know, I can be sad for like 5 minutes because something happened, and then boom, stop. I actually managed to do this because in a way, if you're running a business, you don't really have a choice. You can't spend your whole day weeping about something. You have people to, you know, you have a firm to run, you have deliverables. In a way, you kind of forget your personal problems and move on to the next. Thanks for sharing. I think most of our women firm owners could learn from that conscious decision to compartmentalize. It's a decision. Like this, to become successful is a decision as well. You can decide to succeed or not, right? So I like that. So what I'm talking about more like what the projects that come into your firm, it seems like you have a huge variety, but what is your dream project? What do you want to build in the near future, or what type of project do you want as a dream project?
I think a dream project would be a community of several hundred apartment units, which was built on an individual microgrid, and that microgrid was supporting that entire community with renewable energy. And that would be a dream project. Instead of, it wouldn't be connected to a grid. It would have its own microgrid that was supporting all those units and all those occupants' lives. And it was, you know, and so they were completely living a very resilient life, independent of what happens on the grid in, say, you know, unseen disaster. Or rather, yeah, that would be like a dream project.
So what's the population of this grid? Just curious.
It could be anything. We could start small from like, you know, 50 units or 20 to 50 units, and then build it up into, use that as an example, and then build it up to hundreds of units, and then see, multiply it, lessons learned, and see how far we can develop it. But that would be like a dream project. It would be really nice to kind of work on it and solve all the problems. Start small, I would say 20 to 50 units on a microgrid, self-sustaining microgrid, and then build it up from there. Use that as a case study from pros and cons and all the mistakes and all the lessons learned, and then multiply it into a larger community. But that would, I would say that would be a dream project. If anybody out there is listening and you want to do it, please call me.
Yes, please call Hafsa for sure. Now let's talk about business. I always say creatives were taught how to master their craft, but not taught how to run or grow a business. So I want to ask you how you were able to grow your business as a creative. Do you have any business, education? I'm just curious.
No, I don't. And it was just watching people around me. That gentleman that I collaborated with, Harry Overstreet, he was a small business, and his portfolio is huge. He was widely successful in the public sector. So it was nice to see how he was doing his projects and kind of learn from him, or just learn by watching, I would say. Also it's a lot of, you do a lot of things and you err and then you correct it. So I wouldn't say that there's a Bible, but you just do it, you know? And I think that would be the best, thing I can say. You just do it, and if there are errors, or you know, if it's a mistake, you learn from it and you grow from it and you move on, and if it's a success, you learn from it and then you move on too, and see how you can scale it. But it was a lot of I would say you just try on the job and learn from it, grow. If it's a mistake, see, you know, grow from it too. I would say it was a lot of trial and error. I did not go to school for business. Yeah. And that is one of the problems with the curriculum in architecture school. You know, you come out and there is practically no knowledge of business, no knowledge of codes, no knowledge of the real world. You spend tons of hours in design studios doing, you know, projects which are at concept level. It helps you develop skills. It helps you to communicate ideas. It helps you. Architectural schools, and they help you to think creatively, think outside the box. But in practicality, in order to take that concept from a concept to a built project, that is kind of lacking. And that's why so many people end up being pigeonholed into little roles in larger firms. Because if I came with a strong 3D animation background, that's all I do in a large firm. If I came with a strong, CAD scale or BIM background, that's all I do. And then beyond that, I have no idea. And if the project's in a larger studio or say in China or in a foreign land, then you have no knowledge of the codes and regulations in your own local community. So hands-on knowledge is missing in the architectural curriculum, and it could be, I suppose students can go out there and get internships and learn, like, you know, what's happening in a real architectural studio, because it's very different from what happens in colleges.
Yeah, I completely agree. Like, I mean, even like architecture schools right now, not only is business not being taught, but everything is so theoretical. Like, I was a crit in one of the graduate schools, or I went for a walkthrough. Everything is in outer space, like very conceptual. Like, how can these people find jobs when they're building spaceships in studio? You know what I mean? Like, if you go to architecture schools right now, a lot of them have very conceptual knowledge. They don't have hands-on, you know, detailing, construction detailing skills. So what else? I always tell my friends and clients that I'm a creative at heart, but an entrepreneur by DNA. So that's why, you know, whether I would be practicing architecture or starting different businesses, I knew entrepreneurship is part of, you know, my DNA. But being a creative, having a creative mind also helps running a business, right? Do you agree?
Like, yes.
Problem-solving skills.
I totally agree with you, because you are flexible, because you are creative, because you already know how to think outside the box, and you know how to solve problems. And that's basically what a creative is. If you can solve problems and if you are flexible, then you can, I think you can be good at business if you just acquire resilience along the way and a very thick skin.
Yeah, I like that. I'm taking notes. acquiring resilience. Okay, I have another question. So was there ever a time in your firm where you didn't have work, or you were low in terms of like the pipeline? Like, I don't know how, if COVID affected your business. How did you survive, or how do you do business development? I mean, San Francisco is very competitive. I'm sure there are a lot of architects that do the same thing, sustainable design and all this. How do you stand out as a firm, and what are your business development strategies you use?
Yeah, so I network a lot because we're a small studio. So I would say networking is probably our biggest strength. And whether it was COVID via Zoom calls or just staying in touch with people and constantly networking and learning and acquiring more skills and just pivoting to see, like during COVID, most of the consulting was for how to make commercial office spaces safe in terms of spread of disease. So you see an opportunity in a constraint and you figure that you have the skill set to kind of support it. And yet if you do, then pivot the role and suggest it to clients, hey, would you need that? And that's also commonplace in retail industry where, you know, they were kind of concerned about traffic and spread of disease. So that also came in handy. And because I was doing these you know, self-funded research and private talks like almost over a decade ago before the pandemic, and was focused on healthy buildings and indoor air quality, during the pandemic, it just became a valuable skill set. So you never know if you're constantly learning that at what point your personal research and your personal, you know, knowledge set would come in handy in your business. And so during the pandemic, something that was done 12 years ago came in very handy.
That's great.
Yeah.
And also I realized that you're not only, you've built your personal brand based on all your speaking engagements. A lot of firm owners and creators are very shy to speak. They don't want to, especially women, they're a little bit more timid about, you know, speaking in public and sharing their knowledge. But I think that's also probably one of the reasons for your success, because of your visibility in the marketplace, right? Would you say that it's good to share your knowledge and put yourself out there as part of networking?
Yes, I think if you are passionate about something, it's easy to talk about it. And then it's easy to share your knowledge, because if you come across projects and, you know, you see some sort of a I would say some sort of thing that doesn't align with your personal goals or ideology or your beliefs, then you have to educate people and say, yeah, I think this is probably not the right way of doing things. And probably this is, you know, hurting the occupant's health. And so that's how the advocacy peer talk started at a lot of architectural firms. And it was just a matter of, you know, telling them what the choices of materials and the design choices were doing to indoor air quality and also to occupants' health, and kind of opening their eyes up and saying, you know, our material choices can actually affect the occupants who are in that environment and how the airflow is in a space and how its design can actually affect an occupant's health. So those talks were actually very well received, but it was all from a personal passion in terms of like sharing what I believed was wrong or going in the wrong direction, saying we are part of the knowledgeable, you know, group of people who should be doing something good. So can we pivot, or can we kind of learn from our mistakes and say these are the solutions and this is how we can improve our spaces? And now it's a very commonplace discussion about occupants' health, and Bell came around and Bell made it even more generalized. So everybody can kind of pitch in and say, how do I feel in a space? But it was good to kind of share what I think. I think if you're personally passionate about something, it's easy to discuss it.
Yeah, and also So one thing that I noticed about you the first time I saw you, like in Zoom, is your confidence. You know, like you're a confident and successful woman. I think part of that is because of your passion and your knowledge, because knowledge is power and power builds confidence. But how do you teach women who have no confidence in themselves, especially the young people who are just starting out and want to start their own firms? How do they break out of their shell? You know, what's advice you can give to young people who want to start their own practice to build their confidence as a designer and a business person?
I would think my biggest advice would be to jump into it and just do it. Because once you do it, the confidence comes, because you kind of learn from your mistakes and just stay positive throughout, and grow your network so you know a lot of people, and constantly learn and constantly look for a specialty. And then find that passion and just focus on it, zero on it, and learn as much as possible about that. Because the more you know, the more you'll be able to just talk about it freely without any inhibitions. And one of the things, I mean, you know that too, in architecture schools, we have to go through pretty rough critiques, right? So we've already developed a fairly thick skin, because sometimes you're up for nights before you do a presentation and you have no idea what's coming out of your mouth and if your concept is clearly conveyed. But that's a plus of being in a college environment, because you have to present, and in the roughest of environments, to a bunch of professionals who probably are looking at you like, what is that? And you have spent, you know, your blood and sweat the past few weeks on it, and you have to present it and convey your concept accurately. So we already have that skill set. We already have that experience. And having a thick skin through that process is very helpful in our profession once we're actually practicing. You know that.
And I like what you said, just go for it. Like before a quit, you just kind of have to, you have no choice. You have to present. So if you want to start your own firm, just do it, you know, right? And I, you know, we built resilience through also working in the studio for hours and days. Architecture school is known for, you know, working so hard and no sleep. And yeah, so for entrepreneurs or creatives or you know, students who want to pursue their own firms, really, I mean, it's you have to be very aggressive and just go for it and learn as you go, like what Hafsa was saying. So this was such an amazing talk, Hafsa. My last few questions is, where do you see your firm in 3 years, or what's next for you?
Well, I'd like to continue focusing on carbon neutrality, and not just one technology, but see Toolbox Lab, if we can experiment and come up with other technologies which can make a building carbon neutral. So we would continue on that research and development line. and just see how we can grow and how we can solve actual problems which affect the Earth instead of, you know, building spaceships. Because the more, I mean, we all want to build, you know, those large towers and hanging spaceships. But the thing is that we have so many real problems in the world, and the people here are so precious that I want to focus on solving real problems which have societal and environmental impacts, especially for disadvantaged communities. That I think I would continue down that passion.
That's great that you really want to give back to the Mother Earth and to the community and to people. So that's very inspiring as well. Where can our audience find you? Website, social media?
Yes, it's hbaarchitects.com. And LinkedIn is Hafsa Bird, just like my name. And we have Twitter for business. And we also have Instagram for business, HBA Architects, and Facebook. So happy to chat to anyone. And love to hear ideas. And, you know, of course, looking for collaborative opportunities. Because I, as a woman, I'm sure you too, as a business owner, we're just collaborating, more collaborative by nature, because we want to solve problems and not necessarily dwell in them.
Thank you so much for your time, and I really enjoyed our conversation.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to the Architect My Life podcast. We'd love to hear from you on social media using the hashtag Architect My Life podcast. Be sure to follow us on Instagram at @Aya_ArchitectMyLife. That's Aya, A-Y-A, _ArchitectMyLife. And for women firm owners, I invite you to join the Architect My Life private Facebook group. If you haven't already, we'd appreciate it if you'd subscribe to the show, as well as rate or review us wherever you access podcasts. And if you think you have something to add to the conversation through your success running a business, we invite you to apply to be a guest in one of our upcoming episodes. Visit architectmylife.com/podcast to learn more. Maybe you're not in a position to share your success story yet. That's okay. Take your business to the next level with our coaching and online courses. Get everything you need at architectmylife.com. Remember, there is a way to manage it all so you can achieve more. I'm Aya Schlachter. Thanks again for listening.